Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 327 of the Self-Help Podcast. With me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. You alright, Sean?
I am good. I hope everybody can hear me well. They said that I was a bit low in the mix.
Yes. Well, I think I might be a little bit louder than you again. I'm going to try and keep... Usually it's the other way around. You know, usually you're the one with a booming voice when I have to kind of move the microphone away from you, but I don't know what it is about these. We're not together again, are we, Sean? We're thousands of miles apart.
Yeah, I'm in the hot. Hit 52, middle of the day today, down to about 46 at the moment in the evening.
So, yeah, for non-regular listeners, you're not in London or Brighton. You're in Qatar.
I'm in Qatar.
Cool. Yeah. So it's pretty warm over there, and you're working hard at the hospital there, and everyone doing all right?
Yeah. It's a busy, busy time. So my day goes something like 6:30 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon, that kind of time range is a working day. And that is full on. There is a lot going on.
Yeah, well, you're healing people, aren't you? In your own unique, special kind of way, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about today, healing.
Yeah, and a hospital is a house of healing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it's a new hospital you're in, right? A new build.
Yeah. And it is like a very new build, but it's a very stylized, specialist kind of building.
Yeah,
which is it's more like suites of rooms, and it is a beautiful place. It is amazing.
Yeah, we'll come on to that kind of how design can impact on healing and all that. It's really fascinating stuff. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. All the show notes and links are on there. Previous episodes as well. Sean's will have written a blog post to go alongside this.
I will. It will be amazing.
Is that right? Yeah, you definitely will.
It'll change your life.
Do check that out and sign up to the mailing list for weekly alerts for the show. So apart from jetting off to Qatar, how are you doing, Sean? All well in life?
I am good. As I was saying to you earlier on, when I'm here, it is a case of although the days are very full on and intense, I do get these evenings that I don't really get normally. Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing.
So what do you do with your free time? You can't really go out for a stroll because it's too hot.
It is pretty hot. Well, I'm in a little village, which is a kind of a purpose-built village, and there is a gym here and a swimming pool. So later in this week, once I'm really chilled, I'm going to start using the gym and the swimming pool.
Very nice.
So next time you see me, I shall look like a hunk.
Get some selfies on Instagram of you, or some video diving into the pool.
Yeah. and my rippling muscles.
I'm going to give a quick plug to an event I'm organising on the Whirl.
Yeah, I do. Good.
So, regular listeners know I've set up this little community company called Rethink Now. We got our first gig, so we've been asked to organise a family bike ride from Brimstage Hall, which is bang in the middle of the Whirl.
Yeah.
Kind of between Heswell and Bebbington and Clapbridge, that kind of way. So, 22nd of September, a week on Sunday from when this goes out.
So where does it go to?
We've got access to the private drives of the Levy Hume Estate. So if you go on Google Maps or Google Earth and you'd be kind of from Clapbridge roundabout, go across a bit, you'll see these funny little avenues crisscrossing their way from Brimstage through to Thornton
Hutt. I've actually cycled on them.
Oh, nice. Well, you're not supposed to because it's private land. there is a certain bit of it where a footpath crosses. Yeah. There's a kind of these roads that were built many years ago by Lord Levy Hume with the intention of housing going in, but never happened. Nice. So for one day only, you can head out on your bike or you can walk it. We're going to have some food stalls and all that kind of stuff and some bits going on, but a nice leisurely trip into the countryside from Brimstage Hall. So if you come to there, either buy your bike on your bike if you can, or even bring it on the back of a car if you're coming from a bit further afield. Should be a nice little day out, we hope, weather permitting.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
I'll stick a note on the in the show notes and all that, but I've been banging on about it on Twitter and Instagram and all that too. So, yeah, apologies if I'm spamming everyone too much about it, but, yeah, we'll see how it goes. Should we go into the episode then? Because, in the course of last week's discussion, we started talking about healing somehow.
Yeah.
And we said, hey, we should do an episode about that. So, because, what is healing to a lot of people? Is it just, you know, going to the pharmacist and getting some medicine or going to see your doctor? What is it to you, Sean?
It's really interesting when you start to look at what is it that makes someone feel ill. And you're in one of those situations where there is a grey area where what makes you feel ill might make me feel fine. Mm-hmm. You know, so the illness very much is in the eye of the beholder. And the two problems that I see is the first one is that one size doesn't fit all. You know, people get standard medications. And in my world, it's antidepressants that people are given. And to me, they're given inappropriately. They're given inappropriate doses and to inappropriate people because one size fits all. And that idea, the models of healing, I guess if we were in a village in the center of Africa and we still had a shaman, like a natural doctor, that we would be getting herbs and stuff like that. These days, it's these chemical medications that we give and go down to the chemist, go down to the pharmacist and get this. And then the problem I have is that I get people on cocktails of medication where they've had one medication to overcome the side effects of another medication and then got more side effects. And I will see people that sometimes are taking more than 10 tablets a day, different tablets for things.
Wow.
And it does get quite crazy. I'm just saying, I know so many people that in the end have come off all the medications that they're on, discovered that they didn't need at least half of them, and have kind of moderated the medication, but then they've moderated the effects on their body as well.
Yeah, I mean, we need to be a bit careful here, because, you know, we need to put in a disclaimer about, you know, follow your doctor's advice, and, you know, everyone's bodies are different, etc. And there's also the angle about kind of how pharmaceutical companies, you know, there's some conspiracy about how, you know, they get us hooked on these certain medications just so they can kind of milk bleed us dry for all our cash or the NHS's money, etc., which we could probably do a whole show just on that, maybe. But, yeah, I guess you need to get back to the root cause. Like, my brother is on medication, similar age to me. He's on daily medication for Crohn's, he had 6-7 years ago, something like that, probably. So I'm assuming that for an illness such as that, you know, ditching your medication isn't the best advice necessarily. Then what do you know about Crohn's? Have you got any stories about other ways to heal something like that?
Well, I mean, it's certainly the case that when you do have Crohn's disease, that it is exacerbated by anxiety, stress, you know, busyness, all that kind of stuff. Mm. And one of the ways of dealing with Crohn's is to do things like relaxation, like meditation, doing those things that calm your system down. And obviously there are food issues as well.
Diet, and certain people's guts react differently, don't they, to different foods. You know, some people are kind of intolerant of certain foods, gluten, that kind of thing. Wheat intolerances, that kind of, what have you. I mean, none of us are born needing medication, or I say none, almost none of us need it. So do you think if people that are on medication, like, permanently, need to try and get to the point where they don't need it at all?
It's one of those things where, for me, as I said before we went on air, it's like, if I've got a headache, I'll do what I can to get rid of it. And if I can't get rid of it, I'll take an aspirin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if your first instinct is to reach for the aspirin, you never get a chance to solve maybe the source problem, because the headache might be a symptom and not a cause. But we treat the symptom and not the causes.
Yeah.
And that's one of the problems with the way that we approach healing. You know, you go along to your doctor with a bad back, so he gives you kind of Voltarol and ibuprofen and stuff like that. which is okay. But that's, it may be that the pain in your back is a symptom of something else.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So painkillers mask the pain, don't they? They don't actually fix the problem. So I very rarely I'll take a paracetamol for a bit of a headache. It's, you know, very rare, once a, you know, two or three times a year. So I'm quite lucky. My wife gets some quite, you know, pretty nasty migraines, which will kind of send her to bed for 6, 7, 8 hours, or, you know, I won't see her for ages. She just wants to be in pitch black, which is quite debilitating, actually. But yeah, we know, so she's, and we have tried to get to the bottom of it, really, and tried all sorts. At the moment, she's off caffeine, so she drinks decaf tea.
Yep.
Because she's trying that. So she gave up chocolate for a while to see if it was that. The decaf tea thing does seem to be making a difference, weirdly, but then you get back to the site thing about, is it just stress? You know, she's a teacher, she's mad busy with kids and work and all that. Is it just kind of, or is it related to kind of monthly cycles of her as well? So it's really hard to pin it down. But we're trying really hard to not kind of depend too much on painkillers, because it's not really fixing it.
When you start to look at the reasons why people get ill, one of the things that I think is very, very real but isn't properly investigated is what's known as sick building syndrome.
Okay.
And there are some buildings that make people ill, and that can be because of the plastics in there that are giving off particular chemicals, that kind of stuff, or paints and stuff like that. But one of the things I've become aware of in several new buildings that I've been in is that when you get certain kinds of air conditioning, especially pressured air conditioning, where it's quite a powerful flow, is that people start to get migraines related to the air pressure. And you take them out of that environment and put them in an office where it's not pressured air conditioning, they don't get migraines. And if you mix that with certain kinds of lighting, people just get ill because of the environment that they're in.
Yeah, so this stuff, you know, this, as a designer, this stuff fascinates me, really. And I've Googled it. So NHS.UK has a section on sick building syndrome. Possible symptoms include headaches, blocked or runny nose, dry, itchy skin, dry, sore eyes, rashes, tiredness. So, I mean, you're in a new build hospital over there in Qatar.
Yeah.
Has it been designed in a certain way that you can tell or you know of?
It's an amazing place that has several sections. And generally the build is good. I mean, it is a good, and in there inside this massive hospital, and it's hard to describe the scale of it, but there are three healing gardens where they actually have trees growing inside, and they have water flowing, and sometimes it's flowing over jade rocks and things like that. And the idea is there's spaces, because we're in a desert here, but there's spaces where people can go into these gardens that have a roof on them, so they're inside, but they've got full-size trees growing. Wow. And they can go in there as a healing space.
Blimey.
So they are the healing gardens, which are quite amazing to go in. I was in one today earlier on, and it's the kind of place where you can go and sit down and meditate for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, closer to home, I was in Alderhay, the entrance to that recently.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the atrium to that place is quite inspiring, actually. It's like, wow, this is incredible. I know we've got the Royal Liverpool Hospital it's had a few issues in terms of the build of it, like serious issues, but the current building for the Royal Liverpool is a bit of a monstrosity, isn't it? Not the healthiest of places.
It's a concrete building, and in terms of the feeling of a building, when you're in the old building, I mean, hopefully the new building comes online fairly soon, but there's times when I've been in the old building doing stuff and I'm thinking, how can people actually get well in this building? Because it doesn't have a good energy about it, which sounds a bit kind of hippie and a bit weird. But I think that it is like that. There are some places that you go to and you think, ah, this feels lovely, this. And when you start to look at healing spaces, how much of healing is to do with medication? How much is to do with the environment? And how much is to do with the people that are caring for you? Because that's a big beef for me, because a lot of the medical professionals are so stressed and so stretched that their ability to have that kind of calm, mindful energy that is part of the healing gets hugely diminished.
Yeah. I mean, even zooming out from individual buildings, I'm fascinated by and a bit obsessed with, you know, regular listeners will know about urban design and how towns and cities are designed and how we get around in them and whether that is healthy or not and whether that promotes, yeah, good mental health, like from the outset. Yeah. So we kind of accidentally bought this house where we live and you can't get the car to the front door. There's like this horseshoe of 10 houses where we all live with neighbours and there's a big bit of grass in front, which we bought almost, you know, because we were in a rush because we had a kid on the way.
Yeah.
But in the back of my head, I knew that despite people saying, where are you going to park your car? How are you going to get your shopping in? That it was going to be a healthy place to live and have a family growing up. And it turns out, yeah, perfect. You know, we know all our neighbours really well. Every morning when we go out on our way to school, we say hello to at least two or three of them just because they're on the way out, similar time. You know, we share, take our bins back, do all that together. We've got Doss across the way who looks after everyone's spare keys in case you forget them and you need to get in. Just really healthy place to live.
Like, yeah, that's good.
By design. Whereas your average new build these days, you know, it's got, well, in really bad, poor cases, it hasn't even got a pavement for people to walk on, but...
Yeah, yeah.
It's got space for two or three cars, plus more parked on the street. Kids can't play outside. You never see your neighbours because you just get straight in your car and off you go to work or to wherever it is you need to go. So that design from the outset isn't being done, and that kind of that has real massive knock-on effects for society. How well we are and how we can heal, or if we need to heal, you know.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and we were talking earlier on, weren't we, that if you live on a main road or you live close to a main road, not only is the air pollution, did you say it's the equivalent of smoking 10 cigarettes a day?
Main some of the main roads into London, that's what it's like, 10 or 20 cigarettes a day if you live on those streets, not healthy.
Yeah. But also there's the sound pollution as well.
Yeah, yeah, so there's the physical effect of breathing in diesel fumes all day, which ain't great. But yeah, there's quite a lot of studies around anxiety caused by noise, constant whirring of noise all day. So you live on a flight path or you live near a busy road. Yeah. That's serious stuff, man, that anxiety that comes from it.
Yeah.
And I remember when we did get our house, we moved from our apartment, which was on a busy road in Birkenhead. And the first night in the new house, it was really weird because there was just no noise, and it was almost, we couldn't sleep properly for a few days because it was almost too quiet, you know. It's weird. You also get the knock-on effect of kids not being able to play out through the, you know, the lack of safety from the roads bring, and then that knocks on to kind of how communities knit together and how well people know each other, that kind of stuff. It's quite fascinating. But there's a couple of YouTube vids I'll link to. One's called How Bad Architecture Wrecked American Cities, which is really... I watch that once a month. I'll watch that because it's quite entertaining talk, TED talk. But it's how America, you know, is obviously a country built on immigration. And people from Italy, from the UK, from Ireland, from all over Europe descended on America. But failed to bring across all the brilliant design that we have in European towns and cities, you know, like piazzas and plazas in the Mediterranean. All that knowledge was lost or given up on. And it's had a huge knock-on effect for community in America. It's fascinating stuff. And so there's a couple of videos that I really suggest people look at, which are quite eye-opening.
That whole idea of architecture and the way that we live. One of the things that's interesting for me here is that because it's a desert and it's obviously very hot, the only way people can live here is because of the air conditioning. So air conditioning over here means that it's never silent, it's never quiet. Either you're in a building and you can hear the white noise of the sound in the building, or you're out in the street and there's these massive fans that are pumping the air out. So wherever you go, there is this noise, and I don't know what effect that's going to have on people in the long term.
Well, I mean, what's the status of mental health in Qatar? Like, is it even a thing that's taken seriously, or
that.
Is it just?
Yeah. I mean, there obviously there are mental health facilities here. I don't know what the percentage of take up is. One of the things that's confusing here is that you've got an amount of Qataris, which are less than a million, and then you've got 2.5 million expats that break down into whole nationalities from all over the world. So you'd have to actually be able to break it down into different ethnic groups to be able to understand it, I think.
Right.
If the stats were available to do that. Because there is so much interaction where you've got people that have come from very different cultural settings and then come here. So they might be reacting to the environment or the culture or the work or, you know, you don't know.
I've just had a chat with a lady this morning, actually, that I'm hoping to do some work for. And we might even get her on the show at some point because she's got a really interesting little charity or non-profit that she's setting up locally. But she's suffered quite a lot with mental health and even, you know, suicidal thoughts in recent years. But to kind of get over it, once she was through the worst, she realised that she needed, like, she wasn't really integrated in the community where she lived. And she's made a real effort to kind of get stuck in and set up a network that other people can get involved in. So what's the status in somewhere like Qatar, where people are coming in and out all the time and they don't have time, you know, they're not there for 10, 15, 20 years where they can, you know, build a real network. Is there any support there, or are you encouraged to go to groups or to get involved in things?
Yeah, there are all kinds of things. Very often the national groups have their own kind of cultural, you know, come and be with us kind of thing.
Okay.
And that's, you know, like the Canadians, they all have their own things. But one of the things that's interesting is they've opened this village, because whereas people were in lots of separate towers, now they're in the village. So that the village has a centre. It's got like a community centre with a big gym in it. There's a big basketball tournament which finishes next week, which will be in the village.
Cool.
So, and there's like a swimming pool, and there's women's only gym here, there's a mixed gym, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think that this will develop as like a community hub, and it will be more supportive naturally for the people that are working here, whereas when they've been in separate towers in different parts of the town, it's been hard to do that. People get isolated.
Wow. I was thinking whether we discussed this before or not, this kind of topic of healing, but we have many years ago, because there's a resource which I'm going to mention. It's You Can Heal Yourself, a book by Louise Hay.
That's a very good book.
Yeah, very well-known one, which basically for every ailment you've got, it suggests alternate ways to heal yourself. Through them, doesn't it? So give us some examples, eh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have to kind of read it to really get the feel of it. Mm-hmm. But what she's saying is that every illness, every disease has an emotional, psychological component. And if you can do something about resolving those emotional issues, then you can either get rid of the illness or speed up the healing process.
Wow, okay.
Is the point that she's coming from, which is pretty good. I mean, a lot of people use her work quite a lot in the healing world, mainly to understand the illnesses that they're dealing with their patients, especially people that do things like hypnotherapy, and they're trying to get positive affirmations into people.
Yeah,
they use a lot of her work. Yeah, which is good.
It's fascinating. So yeah. Cool.
It's been shown to be effective, you know.
Because it's all about getting down to that root cause, isn't it? So yeah, if I've got an ache or a pain in my back or elsewhere, that there's only so long, or you can just mask that pain, isn't there? You need to get to know the source of it, whether it's something to do with your posture or something to do with it might be, you know. I remember when I stopped working from home at my desk there and started working at a different desk in my office, and just like, it took my body a while to get used to that new way I was sitting, and the new kind of, and I remember getting these aches and pains in my arm and thinking, hang on a sec, that's because, you know, that's that way that I sit for 5-6 hours a day longer. it's just changed, you know, for, and it's taken me a little bit of time to get used to it.
But that's the thing about one of the most illness creating things that we do is we spend too much time sat down. You know, our bodies are designed to be in motion. We're hunter gatherers. I mean, we're not designed to sit down at a desk for hours on end.
Yep.
And how many of us do that? I mean, I spend a lot of time sitting in consulting rooms, talking with people. And it's only in between people that I will walk down to the waiting room to get someone and then come back up again.
Yeah. You know? So do you actively try and stretch during those little bits of downtime, or you just...
Yeah. And I've got that thing on my watch that if I don't stand up for an hour, it says, come on, time to get up. Yeah, which is cool. That's good.
It's pretty cool. All right. Have you got a resource for us, Sean? Or anything else you want to mention?
My resource, which I put up on the sheet, is it's about pranayama. Now, pranayama is a whole science. The word prana means energy and yam means control. And it's about breathing. Because one of the things that you start to realize as you work with people in their bodies, whether it's working with them psychologically and emotionally, and whether you're doing physical body work with somebody, is people don't breathe properly. And they don't breathe properly because of tension in their backs and the misshaping of the back, or because of tension in the shoulders are too high. And people are shallow breathing. And getting someone to breathe properly, which is what pranayama is about, is amazing. It can be very healing. It can kind of balance your system. But also, it takes lots of the stress out, you know?
Pranayama, I'm sure you've mentioned that, way back when. Yeah. I've definitely heard that phrase before. You'll have to stick the correct spelling in the show notes for me so I can find some there.
It's on there.
Marvellous.
It's on there on the results. I put it in there. So, yeah.
Cool.
Pranayama techniques.
Mine is the Louise Hay book, How to Heal Yourself, You Can Heal Yourself. What is it?
Yeah, You Can Heal Your Life.
You can heal your life. Got there in the end.
Heal your life.
Amazon.co. Yeah, just less than £8 for the paperback.
It's a good book. Good book.
So I'll stick that in. And anything we've missed,
You can get that as an audio book as well.
Of course you can. Yeah, we need to do that for some of our books, It's on the list.
Yeah, it's going to happen soon.
It's on the list.
It's happening.
Cool.
On the list. Yeah.
Right, if there's anything you would like us to discuss, dear listeners, do send us an email or a message online and we'll stick it in there. But otherwise, have yourselves a good week. And Sean, you're away still, aren't you, for a while? So we'll be online again next week.
Yeah, I'll be away for a couple of weeks, yeah. So we'll be online.
All right, you enjoy that AC.
Will do.
Okay, mate.
You take care.
See you later.
Okay. See ya.
Bye. See ya.
Bye.